Okay, so how's the volume feeling for you at the moment? It's good? All right. So do let me know if you can't hear at any point, or if it gets too loud. So something you... Okay. So Asaf is going to give some translations for those who want any words, or, you know, if you want a kind of rolling translation, you can just check in with him what feels supportive. He's by the door. Yeah. So you actually can't get out unless you ask Asaf if you're allowed to leave. Kind of a reverse security guard. So, in the sense, yeah, not insecurity guard. So, if you feel that would be helpful at any point during the talk, just kind of head over there, and Asaf will help you out. So, what I was about to say is that the felt sense of silence actually gets stronger and more difficult to kind of talk over. You may or may not notice that because you're kind of just, maybe you're not having to do that so much, right? Disturb the silence, disturb the peace. So apologies for disturbing the peace. And hopefully my disturbance will be in support of further peace along the way. But if you can stay relatively peaceful about that now, that will really help as well. All right. And I'll try not to get you too excited. So something many of you will have noticed on this retreat is there's been quite a variety of practices, you know, and yeah, some of what I'm going to talk about tonight is the potential for some further practices. The question may have occurred to you at some point, why so many practices? You know, have you guys got some kind of obsessive compulsive practice delivery issue that you really should practice with, you know? And obviously, if you know a good practice for that, I'd love to hear about it. So we could just share practices sometime if that's your thing. So on the one hand, there's many practices. On the other hand, there's different varieties of metta practice. Now, we could just see all of these practices are actually just metta practice, in a way. Yeah. Or they're all just reduction of dukkha practices, just like different ways of kind of framing this thing. And interestingly, a different way of framing it sometimes helps, right? It's one of the helpful things that we can do with our life. Frame things differently. You know, you probably do that automatically, or you do that occasionally, or whenever you have a conversation with someone about something. It kind of sets a different frame. It's kind of one of the things that's helpful. One of the ways that we say, you know, in English we have a saying, a problem shared is a problem halved, in a way. It kind of feels like that. It's like, oh, okay, we're both relating to this, both working through this. So on the one hand, we could say all these practices are metta practices. You might want to think, so, okay, so how does that work for you? Another question, another kind of reflection could be, all of these practices support the opening of metta, you know, the kind of the flow of metta. Almost as if like metta could be the outcome of the practice. Yeah, more kindness, more welcoming, more allowing, more caring, more releasing, even, yeah. In a way, if we see that something is empty of being any one particular way, yeah, that insightful practice, maybe we notice that brings in, encourages a sense of, well, it can stay then. It doesn't have to go. It's not like I've seen that it's empty, has to go. It could be allowed to stay. allowed to be met well. Yeah. And perhaps one way that we could define metta temporarily, we'll see it's undefinable really, is a way of meeting well. Whatever it feels like that we meet this well is metta. And the goal of our practice, the goal that also reduces dukkha, is the practice of meeting well. Yeah. So far, can we agree? To some degree? Yeah. It's a way of looking at the practice, right? It doesn't have to be, this is the new way of looking at the practice. It's new and improved. Give up all the old ways. It's a way of looking at this practice. To say that something is empty, right? From its own side, it does not exist any particular way. Why? Because it's dependently coming into being. It's dependently coming into being. And one of the things that we can notice through all of these practices is it depends on how we meet it. That unpleasant Vedana, right? Met with aversion gets more unpleasant. Not met with aversion, with pushing away, with rejection, trying to escape from, doesn't stay the same from its own side. Yeah, we've all seen that to some degree. Right? I sometimes use this phrase, like, sometimes we can't see if there's a possibility of making things better. So we can actually practice the counterfactual. I may have said this already. But you could ask yourself, could I make it worse? Could I make it worse? And if we agree, yeah, I can think of quite a lot of ways of making this worse. Then we see it's empty of being that way. It does depend on how I relate to it. And so that opens out that question then, what might be a supportive, skillful, wholesome way of relating to this experience? This experience is fabricated. So again, you know, so that why so many practices? Why not just one practice where we're fabricating, we're seeing, you know, what works for us? For me, it's because it supports the fullness of the ways of fabricating. Supports a fuller sense of, you can fabricate this way and you can fabricate that way. And that, to me, really reinforces just how fabricated it is. I pull away on this thread, or I could pull away on that thread. I can pull away on this, and all these things seem so solid, but actually I'm starting to see, wow, there's a lot of entry points here to relieve dukkha. Dukkha is a very fragile stack of cards, and it seems so solid until I start noticing this is really just held together by really poor quality glue and, you know, some kind of vacuum thing. It starts to just blow a little bit of metal on it, starts changing, evolving, maybe even collapsing, fading, dissolving, we might have experienced at times. Yeah. The other thing is it actually keeps it interesting, it keeps us engaged. Yeah, that can be a side benefit. You may have noticed this about the fabrication of attention. Attention follows interest. If we can keep practice interesting, we might do it for longer. And when we do it for longer, we kind of absorb into it a little bit more, subtleize into it a little bit more. Yeah. That's an important kind of footnote. Don't do all the practices all of the time. Yeah. A couple of reasons why we might want to say that. Firstly, we're looking for that balancing, yeah. Majority time, samadhi, samatha, well-being, easing, relaxing, soothing, opening, all of that. And then we sprinkle in the insights. So the insights, they're a little bit like the herbs on the dish. Yeah. Sometimes it's nice to have a plate of herbs, but many times we want that just like, it's mainly the whatever, carbohydrates, proteins, and a little sprinkling of herbs. So tempting to give you a cooking lesson now, but I'll resist that. Yeah. So I'm not a great cook, but luckily you didn't come here for that. So the second reason why we don't want to kind of just do everything you know, oh, I'll do a bit of Vedana, and then actually it's a Nietzsche, but while I'm here, unsatisfactory. Ooh, yeah. And then all of a sudden it's kind of all faded and it's gone a bit mushy, which is, that might be nice. Maybe you were going for mushy. I wouldn't suggest serving it to anyone else, but, you know, you might enjoy it at a certain point. So, but don't do it all at the same time. Mostly because we want a bit of clarity about what does this fabricate? What does this practice actually do? So just sticking with the one, just like keep seeing. It's like, oh, what's it doing? How is experience relating to this? So this word fabricated, this experience is fabricated. Kind of a unusual word. Are we comfortable with that word? Does anyone want a translation, a Hebrew translation for the word fabricating? Okay. Hevnia. Okay. So I'm not going to be able to say this sentence in Hebrew, but like you're going to have to play with this verb. So, you know, the Buddha was, no, I think it was maybe Sariputta. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Someone was asked in the teachings, you know, so why do you call them fabrications? Why do you call these fabrications? And he says, we call them fabrications because they fabricate fabricated things. So fabrications themselves fabricate other fabricated things. Okay? Or more accurately, fabrications fabricate fabricated fabrications that fabricate fabricated fabrications. And it all just builds up in this way, fabricating another fabricated fabrication. And, you know, before you know it, not only are you tongue-tied, but you're entangled in a dukkha kind of experience. The more fabricated the experience, the more dukkha there is. The more built up, the more constructed, the more conditioned, different words for fabricated, the more dukkha there'll be. And so we want to understand, how does this practice fabricate? All practices fabricate. Non-practice, not practicing, fabricates. Does it fabricate in a good way or in a bad way? In a wholesome way or in an unwholesome way? And so essentially, there's only really two directions experience can go. And the Buddha gives a lovely teaching called the two sorts of intention, which is basically your intention, your direction, your movement of fabrication is either towards dukkha or it's away from it. That's the only really important distinction that we would make between what is a wholesome, skillful, wise practice to do and what would be an unwholesome, unskillful, wise practice to do. Yeah. Unwise. Basically, the hindrances, greediness, aversiveness, restlessness, dullness, doubt, is going to lead you to further and further fabrications of dukkha, and then metta, and generosity, and calm, steadiness, brightness, aliveness, and a confidence and a conviction in yourself that you can fabricate this experience in a more skillful or beautiful way. Yeah. So we could go down that way or we can go down that way. And we're trying to go down the free way. Yeah. Not the free way, the freer way. I think you get me. So in my practice, and also clearly, like in these teachings, what I'm thinking is, how is this experience fabricated? Whatever experience it is that I'm having. Or when I'm meeting you and you're describing to me your experience, I'm thinking, oh, how's that fabricated? And that's the kind of question I'm always trying to ask myself, is like, what are we doing? How are we fabricating this experience? And the helpful teaching that says, there's basically three ways we fabricate experience. We fabricate it through the form, the body, and that's, I think, what I was talking about on the first evening I spoke. I don't really remember. I think I was. And that we should have a confidence, a conviction that we can change that. The form and the space, yeah, that materiality. The second way that we can notice that our experience is fabricated is through the thoughts and the tone of that thinking that we're having now. Yeah. So if there's thinking happening in your experience, it's shaping, molding. You might be having language forming and, you know, shaping how you feel yourself to be, what you think this experience is. And that language, we can utilize it when we drop in the note of anicca, or this is unsatisfactory. We're using that verbal fabrication to introduce and carry a meaning into experience. Same thing in the metta. That felt sense of safety that I want you to have, and I feel it, and then I embody that word and I say safety. And for some reason it means something to me, right? Just in the same way as you would say to me, you know, whatever it is, I'm happy. And I'm like, hey, you just shared that, it just came over. I'm happy for you. That's good news for me. Yeah. Or I might think, why, you don't deserve happiness, but, you know, I try and keep that. I don't feel that at all. I'm really happy if you're happy. The third kind of fabrication that we want to be aware of is, in short, what we're paying attention to out of all of this range of things and how we're paying attention to it, that atmosphere of the attention. And I call this attentional fabrication. The fabrication that comes through with that intention, attention, what we pay attention to, how we're paying attention to it, which is what makes our perception of reality. Yeah? Our perception of reality, our experience of reality, is made up of what we're paying attention to and how we're paying attention to it. Okay? Does anyone disagree? If you don't pay attention to something, are you experiencing it or not? You can decide for yourself. I think you're not experiencing it. If you're not paying attention to it, it's not there. Okay? If you start paying attention to it, it's back there. Right? For example, if you go into a daydream and you're thinking something else and we all get up and walk out and then you start paying attention, you know, or if we make a noise while we're trying to walk out silently and you notice, you pay attention to that. So all the ways that we're practicing is shaping experience to be just that little bit more easeful, yeah, just that little bit more comfortable. And we can see all of these practices are having an impact on experience. Otherwise, we wouldn't do it. They can only have an impact on experience through these ways of fabricating. You can, if you want, you can sit down and map them all out. You know, what are they doing? What's it doing? How's it having a verbal fabrication, attentional fabrication? We're choosing what we pay attention to. We're choosing how we pay attention to it. Right? All of these practices are fulfilling that role. And so we just check in, look at your experience. What's happening here? How is it being fabricated? How is it being exposed, expressed in the body, in the verbal thinking ways, in what you're paying attention to, how you're paying attention to it? And then what would be more wholesome, more beneficial, more supportive? Yeah. And there's only two ways. Ways that lead to dukkha and ways that support freedom. Yeah. Very simple. Right? Three ways to fabricate, two directions to go in. And then there comes this question. Okay. Is what's here wholesome, skillful, beneficial? If it's not, am I willing to let it go? Am I willing to let that go? Not refabricate it. Yeah. If it is wholesome, delightful, beautiful, am I willing to sustain it? Yeah. And there we go. Then we're starting to get a path together. And in a certain sense, you know, this, what they call right effort, or four great efforts in the path, kind of sits there in the heart of the path. Yeah. If it's unskillful, am I willing to let it go? If it's skillful, if it's wholesome, if it's beautiful, yeah, am I willing to support it and keep it there? And if things are not either at this point in time, Am I willing to cultivate, to plant the seeds, to bring into being the skillful and not plant the seeds and head in the directions that's going to take me away from skillfulness, from freedom? Yeah. And then you have four great efforts. Yeah. Supporting the good, sustaining the beneficial, not supporting the unwholesome, and letting it go as soon as we can. Not building it, not supporting it, not sustaining it, allowing it to dissolve. So what we pay attention to and how we pay attention to it is our experience, or shapes our experience, however you want to see it. And so we can see in our practice that we have this suggestion of a direction. It's like this experience is already fabricated. It's already fabricated. So what should we do with it? Should we not touch it? And there can be this practice fantasy, sometimes called being with things as they are. Yeah? He said, just don't interfere with it. Just allow it to be the way it already is. But that doesn't really quite fully embrace this kind of four great efforts entirely, right? Like, understand, is it dukkha or not? Maybe before, like, should we hang out here? You know, I think it would be a little bit like randomly driving to a location with a picnic box in the back of your car, and then wherever you happened to run out of gas, you say, let's just picnic here. Rather than consider, would this be the best place for us to picnic? To sit out, to lay out our food, you know? So, it's that kind of skillfulness. But further, what is this experience? What is this experience? And apparently, there's a Talmudic phrase, which I think you ought to know about. I'm just kidding. But I heard that it was related to this, although I couldn't track it down. Have you heard of the author Anais Nin? I think that's how you say her name. Yeah, Anais Nin. There's an author. Anais? All right, it's close enough, yeah. I mean, there's a funny I. Anais. Anyway. And we... forgive the mispronunciation. And a line in the book, The Seduction of the Minotaur, it says, we do not see things as they are. We see things as we are. We do not see things as they are. We see things as we are. That this reality we see out there is a reflection of all that's going on inside of us, of what we've chosen to pay attention to, of how we're paying attention to it. And when you kind of mentioned it, you know, see that, this experience is fabricated by a whole number of things, and we start playing with these practices, they're all avenues towards lessening fabrication. And so, if we can get into that idea, then we can also understand, we had this second noble truth, the dukkha samudaya. Who does dukkha hang around with? Who comes along when dukkha comes along? And that contractedness in the body, you know, that time pressure, that urgency, that increase in demand, all of those kind of characters. And we do one practice that lessens one of them. You may also notice it lessens the others as well, right? Let's take an example of like demanding, you know, this kind of demanding, I want to get it, I don't want to have it, or, you know, whatever direction it's going in. You can't have a demanding without an inflated sense of self. An inflated sense of self and mission. they have to have a mission to do, and that mission usually is around demanding, right? Does that make sense? So if you fade the demanding, you will also fade the self that demands. Those demands kind of depend on an urgency, right? It's not like, I've got to have it, but, you know, I mean, next week's going to be okay. I mean, it's like, don't rush. I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's like, it increases that sense of the time pressure. It also inflates the solidity of a thing. Yeah, the non-anicca nature of that. It's like, if I get rid of that, then it's going to be great. But it's only going to really last for a moment anyway. I mean, one way or the other. I mean, it's, or if I really, you know, get rid of it, whatever. Relates to that solidity. You fade the solidity, it fades the demand. Like, what's the... who could get excited about demanding for something that doesn't even barely exist for the moment that it's in? And then the self also fades. So we pull on one thread and all the threads dissolve together. Does that make sense? Does that relate to your experience? Somewhat? Yeah? Great. I'm just pulling you in with agreement, and then I'm going to say something you don't like, and it's kind of like, but you already agreed with me. I mean, come on. No, it's not a trick. The question becomes, though, what is reality? Now, I feel like I came to the meditation, the teaching, this is like to get to a sense of, you know, I want to know what's true. And I want to know what's going on. I want to understand reality. I want to get real, whatever that might mean. I want to be real, whatever that might mean. Yeah. And then you come towards this experience of reality and you realize, oh, this experience is a perception of reality. Have we said this already? Is this something new to say? The perception and experience are actually the same thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, maybe like, what is perception? What by perception we mean this appearance here, right? That you're here, and we're doing this, right? This is your experience. I'm sorry, it's not any better, but this is it. And this knowing it, of this perception, this is your experience, okay? Here it is. There we go. This is it. We are here. Inner perception, right? Contacting a perception. There's a perception of myself being here, having a perception of you being there, and we're doing this together, and this is the perception. This is our experience. Okay? Perception, experience. They're just two sides of the same thing, right? They're just two ways of talking about the same thing. So our experience of reality is a perception of reality. Can we agree to that? Or adopt that view for this point in the talk, and then we can argue about it later. And then the phrase occurred to me, our perception of reality says more about perception than it can about reality. Our perception of reality says more about the nature of perception than it can about reality. What we're investigating is not reality, we're investigating perceptions. That's what we're investigating. How is this perception of reality appearing to us? Yeah? And I hope that doesn't sound like, oh, freaky, we're going into, you know, trippy territory, but it's just like, this is the nature of our experience, right? Perceptions in awareness, dependently arising. And dependently fading, easing. You have a problem? Okay. Okay. Okay, I just did it. But it didn't work. Okay. Okay. So you know that you're conscious right now. Yeah, you're having a conscious experience, or so it seems, right? We feel like we know what is happening. Okay, that what you know is a perception. That thing that you're knowing, the other side of consciousness is perception. Consciousness needs a perception, right? And we know this perception. That thing you know, right? Not the thing that knows, the thing that is known, that's a perception. Okay, it can be really complex and it can be really, you know, simple, right? So you pay attention to something in a certain way and you have a perception. And that perception is known, otherwise it's also not an experience if it's not being known. And then there we go, that's our life. And it should feel like reality. Right? That's not a bug, that's a feature of perception, of reality, is that it feels like reality. And someone comes along and says, this is just a perception of reality. And you're like, well, how is that different than reality? Well, it shouldn't feel any different to a perceiver of reality. Otherwise, you might just stay in bed all the time or whatever it is. You know, we need to have drive and motivation. We're evolved aspects of life that want to, you know, become more life. And so it's important that we don't doubt our perception of reality. When you start doubting your perception of reality, the whole system thinks it's been poisoned and it starts to vomit, right? So I don't want you to get to that point, but just to say, okay, this is a perception of reality. It's a perception of reality. And that, hopefully, will open out a sense of freedom, possibility, malleability, and further skillfulness in our practice. When we can say, with confidence, this is a perception. It says more about perception than it does about reality. It can be a really helpful position to come into and to understand that every perception is fabricated. Every perception is fabricated. It feels like reality. It should feel like reality, as if it's objective reality, as if we really could be with things reality, just as it is. That phrase is kind of used in the teachings in places, and it's more or less being with things as they are becoming. Being with things as they're coming into being, such, in such a way, and being with things also in such a way that they're allowed to pass out of experience. An encouragement, perhaps, to be with things with metta. And when we're with things with metta, if this practice is worth any of your time, it doesn't leave the perception of reality untouched. That's why we do it. All of these practices could be seen as practices of metta. Any practice of metta touches the perception of reality. It is not untouched, it is touched. And the felt sense is a sense of well-being. Yeah. That's what we're cultivating. And we can only do that because what we perceive is a perception. What we experience is a perception. Okay, I've got you in a nice state of confusion now. It's not too bad, it's not too good. It's just...
Maybe you can give an opposite example.
What do you mean, argue against myself? No, what do you... No, just joking, what do you... An opposite example? I'm sorry, I don't know what I'm opposite to.
Like you say that there is a perception. What is the opposite of perception? Or what is the denying perception?
Sorry, I got distracted.
What's denying? What is the opposite of perception? Is there any other possibility? That's the only thing that we have.
Right.
So. Can you repeat
It was a good confused. I wouldn't want to get rid of that kind of confused. So there's good confused and there's bad confused, right? It's always good. So for me, the bad confused is I didn't make enough sense that you are actually just confused about what I might mean. And there's kind of a good confused, which is like, well, hang on, if we've only got perceptions of reality, is that good enough or not good enough? And I think that's an important kind of confused to be. So, yeah, any moment of your life is a perception. Any moment that you experience is a perception, and it should feel like reality. Furthermore, we could say this in another way, okay? Which is that... Probably not. There will be questions tomorrow, right? But let's just see. Is that okay? You really want to? You sure? Okay. Okay. So here's another way we could say. It seems to us that what we experience is senses coming towards us, and somehow we filter it, and then we turn it around, and then we have this impression in awareness, and this is what reality is. And I thought that's probably what happened. But somebody discovered, maybe a century ago, or even many centuries ago, that's just impossible. Like, the size that the brain would have to be to take in all of the sensory material of the world, right? And then filter it out, define it, determine it, project it. And we're just thinking, well, even with six senses, and I don't know how many frames per second is the speed of life, yeah? Like, it's better than whatever you can get in HD, blah, blah, super stream, super fast, blah, 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 you know. This is reality coming at you, and somehow we can take it all in. And the brain is, tiny, and it runs on less power than a light bulb. How... Someone eventually worked... No, that doesn't... No. This doesn't work this way. It works the other way. We make a prediction, a good enough prediction, for survival, with conclusions, experience, explanations, and whatever, and then we just check it against the data. Yeah? Is it still this? Yeah, it looks like this. Oh, is that, that's a face? Yeah, a face. Hey, cool. I remember those. But that's happening. It's still incredibly fast. It's still an enormous amount of processing, right? But it's enough to be able to make a sensible prediction that this is what reality is, yeah? And then we get these perceptions which relate to reality, but are not an imprint of reality. And the question might come, so then what is reality? In a sense, wrong question. The question is, what should we do about this situation we have of only having perceptions? How can we have good, wholesome, helpful perceptions that weren't evolved perceptions? Yeah? A lot of our perceptions are about survival. We don't need those so much anymore. Yeah? We are cave people, evolved, you know, savanna survivors living in supermarket age. You don't need to live that way. Yeah? We're starting to live in really, you know, potentially, and we could certainly do a lot better, levels of humanity and levels of understanding into beingness. You know, there's a lot of caring, peace-loving, vegan, pacifist, sensitive beings in this room, you know, who want to see a better world. And we realize, I've got to work with this greed and aversion habit that has been helpful to get us this far, but now seems a little bit, well, boring, really, compared to the love and the generosity and the gratefulness and all the beauty that we can support. Yeah? So it seems like, okay, this is reality existing from its own side, but actually this is really a perception. Yeah? Now, I'm no, you know, neuroscientist telling you exactly what's going on in your all that stuff. Brain, whatever. But we understand this makes sense according to the Dharma. There's a best guess of what experience is, but the Dharma is offering us a better guess of what we can do, how we can relate, And all of these practices start to come together in this way. When we see this is just a perception, just a perception of reality, what we want to feel is an increase in the sense of possibility and a decrease in the sense of push and pull upon it. And see what that does. If we can hold this as just a perception in this conscious experience, being known, being felt, being welcomed, being eased, given space, whatever that means for you, then we start to see this Dharma exploration can go a subtler level again. If we want to. And so, let's see, tomorrow, we can open out again this way that we can make the wholesome and the skillful efforts that are required of us to support what's called the kusala, the beautiful, the good, the wise, the wholesome qualities that we can invite into being and let go of the akusala, the unskillful, the unwholesome, dukkha building qualities that were helpful to get us this far through billions of years of existence. But to right now, right here, what is the kusala, the beautiful, that you wish to bring into being? Shall we end with a poem? Yeah, feels nice. So this is a poem by Ram Dass. Do you know Ram Dass? Okay. Somebody not know Ram Dass? Okay. So Ram Dass was an American, and he went to India. He kind of awoke his sense of spirituality through LSD by chance, but then became a very devoted, passionate practitioner of meditation. And yeah, he wrote a poem called I Make the Effort. And it goes, I make the effort to maintain a ground of oceanic silence, out of which arises the multitude of phenomena of daily life. I make the effort to maintain a ground of oceanic silence, out of which arises the multitude of phenomena of daily life. I make the effort to see and to passionately open in love to the spirit that infuses all things. I make the effort to see and to passionately open in love to the spirit that infuses all things. I make the effort to see the beloved in everyone and to serve the beloved through everyone, including the earth. I often fail in these aspirations because I lose the balance between separateness and unity, get lost in my separateness and feel afraid. But I make the effort. So let's have a quiet minute together.